Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Thursday, the 20th of April. Here in Germany, the weather has been beautiful. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura, looking at what you're talking about on social media.
And this is what we've lined up for you today. Zimbabwe's biggest opposition party, MDC, forms alliance with former vice president's party. But what exactly does it mean?
It is an alliance of convenience. There is nothing in common between Morgan Tsvangirai and Grace Mujuru.
A lot of discussion around Zimbabwe's new alliances, of course, and we'll be getting some of your comments too.
Political tensions rise in Kenya as general elections draw closer.
We must eliminate tribalism in Kenya. We must vote as Kenyans with our heads.
Join in the discussion right now on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa, for some of your comments on that story as well.
And we shall be bringing you all that and more. But first, here is what's been happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. The Foreign Minister of Australia, Julie Bishop, has urged China to do more to help international efforts to pressure and persuade North Korea to stop escalating nuclear and missile threats.
China has a unique relationship with North Korea and is in fact the source of virtually all of North Korea's foreign direct investment. There is much more that China can do, and we will certainly encourage China to that end.
The UN envoy to Syria, Staffan de Mistura, has described a suicide car bomb attack which killed 126 people at a rebel-held transit point west of Aleppo on Saturday as horrific. He said the tragedy was compounded by the fact that those who were targeted had lived under siege for 3 years and were finally being allowed to depart.
Once they came out, someone pretending even to distribute aid and attracting the children produced that horrific explosion.
In Kenya, President Uhuru Kenyatta has warned against any outbursts of violence in the country as campaigning gets underway for a general election on August the 8th. He told a press conference in Nairobi that anybody who engages in acts of violence would be dealt with in accordance with the law, irrespective of who they were. 10 years ago, elections in Kenya were marred by violence that left more than 1,100 people dead and hundreds of thousands displaced. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The energy minister of Saudi Arabia, Khalid Al-Falih, said on Thursday that oil-producing countries might have to prolong output cuts agreed for the first 6 months of this year in order to achieve the desired rebalancing of the market. Members of OPEC agreed in November to a temporary cut in production of 1.2 million barrels a day in order to shore up prices. The International Energy Agency said last week if OPEC were to extend its output cut, then prices would be boosted, but that in turn would encourage US shale producers to pump even more. 7 Angolan opposition activists have been sentenced to 45 days in jail over a protest calling for transparency in next year's election when longtime president José Eduardo dos Santos stands down. The defendants were also fined $400 each. Around 50 protesters attended the unauthorized demonstration in Luanda on Monday, at which they called for fair elections. The police arrested 7 protesters. In France, 20 members of a suspected jihadist network thought to have been behind a grenade attack on a Jewish grocery store in 2012 have gone on trial on terror charges. France is grappling with renewed fears of terrorist assaults ahead of Sunday's presidential election. Finally, some disappointing news for Bundesliga fans. For the first time since 2009, there will be no German team at the semi-finals of the Champions League. Borussia Dortmund were beaten by Monaco 3-1 in Wednesday's quarter-final second leg. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com.
This is DW with Africa Link broadcasting from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
With me, Wendy Komwara.
And we start the program with from Zimbabwe, where the main opposition party, Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, and the National People's Party, led by the country's former deputy president, Joyce Mujuru, on Wednesday signed a pact to work together to defeat veteran president Robert Mugabe's party in 2018 elections. MDC's Morgan Tsvangirai described the move as the beginning of the building blocks towards establishing a broad alliance to confront ZANU-PF in next year's presidential and parliamentary elections. ZANU-PF endorsed the 93-year-old Mugabe as its candidate for next year's election. I've been speaking to Wilf Mbanga, editor-in-chief of the Zimbabwean newspaper, and I started by asking him just how strong ZANU-PF is and how much support Mugabe still commands among the local populace.
Well, Mugabe does have some support in the rural areas. People who are not affected by economic meltdown and, you know, who are not aware of what is really going on in the country. These are people who have got less education, who have no access to media, but the majority of educated blacks, the elite, vote for the MDC led by Morgan Tsvangirai.
You say that whoever is not affected by the current economic status in the country will vote for President Mugabe, or rather are the people who are still supporting ZANU-PF, and you say these are basically the people who are rural-based. How big is this population?
Well, the majority of Zimbabweans still live in the rural areas. However, some of them, I mean, especially the young, educated, rural blacks, are aware now of what is going on, and they would vote for MDC.
If the majority of the population still lives in the rural area and these are the people who probably don't directly feel the melt, the economic meltdown, are going to be voting for ZANU-PF, shall we then say that the results, if it turns out in favor of ZANU-PF, will after all be genuine?
No. Because there are a lot of young people in the rural areas who are now educated, who are keeping in touch with what is going on through social media. And they're aware of what is going on. But a lot of them will probably vote ZANU-PF because of intimidation.
Let's talk about the newly formed alliance. Is this the right move towards defeating President Mugabe, and how sustainable is it?
It will help not to divide the anti-Mugabe vote. But the problem with that alliance is that it is an alliance of convenience. There is nothing in common between Morgan Tsvangirai and Grace Mujuru. All she does is bring about a disgruntled voice from ZANU-PF.
Disgruntled voice from ZANU-PF. That takes me to my next question. Now, with the party being hit by factionalism over Mugabe's succession, what implications could this have for the party in the next upcoming elections, as well as its future?
But ZANU-PF always, you know, comes together during elections. They know that if they fight during election time, they will not win. They've always had these fights, but at election time, they come together.
I was speaking to Wilf Mbanga, editor-in-chief of the Zimbabwean newspaper.
This is just the beginning of the building blocks towards establishing a broader alliance to confront ZANU-PF between now and the next elections in 2018.
That was Morgan Tsvangirai speaking at the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding between his party and Joyce Mujuru's party. Now, we do have comments, of course. One from Clifford Bwalia says, it's a good move, but ZANU-PF will win the elections first round. There won't be a rerun. And of course, another comment coming in from Tunde Asaju says, I do not see the future of Zimbabwe with these hurried alliances, but I am an outsider looking in. Good luck, Zimbabwe.
I can also see a comment just coming in from one Changwe Elvis who says, let the games just begin. Okay, it seems like it's all about elections from one to another. Now, from the southern part of Africa, we go to East Africa. And in Kenya, political tension is rising as the general election set for 8th August draws closer. The country has already witnessed numerous chaotic and messed up party nominations in different counties. There have also been cases cases of kidnapping of political aspirants and physical fights among rival party members. Today, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta vowed not to tolerate any violence during the election period. Meanwhile, the opposition welcomed a new member into their alliance, saying they had come up with the perfect team to remove President Kenyatta from power. DW's Andrew Wasike brings us the details.
Speaking to the Nation at State House in Nairobi in a televised press briefing, President Uhuru Kenyatta said that he was concerned about incidents of violence and chaos that have been witnessed across the country during the ongoing party nominations.
Let me say clearly again that such violence will not be tolerated. My government is committed to enforcing the rule of law and ensuring the safety and security of all citizens during these primaries and the general election scheduled in August.
At a separate event attended by thousands of opposition supporters that was organized by the Kenya's opposition, the National Super Alliance, NASA, the principals ushered in a new member, Bomet Governor Isaac Ruto.
We must eliminate tribalism in Kenya. There are so many issues I have raised with the current regime for more than 4 years. But they have continued to rubbish it and abuse everybody from Turkana all the way to Loitoktok. Is that the country we want?
On his part, one of the alliance principals, Raila Odinga, said that the entry of Ruto will definitely remove the ruling Jubilee Party from power.
The unity of our nation is within sight. I'm proud to welcome Honorable Isaac Ruto to the NASA summit. With his entry, we launch a new march towards August 8th elections. We begin a new journey characterized by bold, candid, honest, and truthful engagement with our citizens to resolve the problems afflicting our nation.
This comes at a time when the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights, KNCHR, and the National Democratic Institute, NDI, have released reports warning of possible violence during this year's August 8th general elections.
Andrew Wasike in Nairobi. Now, knowing how Kenyans can be very active on social media, I'm sure there are lots of comments to this effect.
Absolutely. And although we had the Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta making his press conference, what dominated the topic on social media was NASA, that is the National Alliance, Super Alliance, from the opposition. A comment from Steve Juma says, "We are tired of waiting. Now that we have our fifth principal, let each be president for 1 year consecutively."
That's an interesting observation. Yeah, I think one term is also a good thing to think about. But first, let's see what's been happening elsewhere in the world. Germany's Achim Steiner is the new head of the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP. Steiner is replacing Helen Clark, a former New Zealand prime minister who stepped down after the end of her second four-year term. Steiner will be at the helm of UN for the next 4 years. Jen Nyingi with the details.
The decision of Achim Steiner to take up the UN top job was reached by UNDP's executive board after it was consulted by the Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Steiner previously served at the UN Environment Programme, where he headed the UN office in Kenya. Among the issues he advocated for during his reign is fighting poaching and illegal trade in wildlife.
Even more alarming is that it is eroding our planet's biodiversity and undermining the natural systems upon which we all depend. It is also destroying the natural capital on which many nations could build healthy tourism industries and deprives governments of much-needed revenue. It is spreading corruption and undermining the rule of law all around the world. This must stop, and the time to take action is long overdue.
Headquartered in USA City of New York, the UNDP seeks to reduce poverty, improve social development, and encourage women's empowerment. The UN agency works in 170 countries. In 2015, the agency received $4.5 billion in voluntary funding.
Jen Nyingi reporting.
A comment from the German Foreign Office congratulated, quoted Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel and congratulated Achim Steiner as the best choice for UNDP.
That's an interesting one. I'm sure we shall have some time to discuss that a little later. You're listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany, with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And Wanji Komora.
In the next 15 minutes, what does it take to be a star in Nollywood without being Nigerian or even African?
You need to understand the culture, first of all, and then you need to then understand the people.
And in case you're wondering, how can I be a part of Africa Link Live? Go over to our Facebook page, DW Africa. Leave your comment there, like, share, and you might get a chance to be on this show. So do it now.
Speaking out.
UN investigators have confirmed the discovery of another 17 mass graves in Central Democratic Republic of Congo. UNHCR now wants the International Criminal Court, ICC, to take action. The discovery brings the number of such sites recorded by the UN investigators to 40. According to the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, 15 of the newly uncovered graves were in a cemetery in the town of Shimbulu, while two others were located in the village of Shenke. Eddie Micah Jr. with the details.
The ongoing clashes between security forces and local militia in central Kasai have left dozens dead. The recent discovery of 17 extra mass graves puts the total number found since last August at 40. The UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric echoed its organization's Commissioner for Human Rights, Zaid Rad Al Hussein's words, calling on the Congolese government to do a thorough investigation.
He's urging government to ensure a prompt, transparent, and independent investigation to establish the facts. Should there be no effective national investigation, he said he will not hesitate to urge the international community to support an international investigation.
Fighting began in Kasai after government security forces killed tribal chief Jean-Pierre Mpandi, who had started an uprising against President Joseph Kabila. According to the UN, over 400 people have been killed and more than 200,000 displaced as the violence in the region keeps escalating. This has resulted in a rising number of refugees fleeing to neighboring Angola. Through its mission, known as MONUSCO, the UN still has over 15,000 soldiers in DR Congo, even though the original number was cut down. An annual budget of more than $1 billion is used by the peacekeeping mission, making it the largest and most expensive mission of the United Nations. However, violence in the country continues. The UN is also pressing President Joseph Kabila to honor a power-sharing deal with the opposition.
Eddie Micah Jr. reporting.
And we do have comments on this story. One user going by the name Muktech says, "We are tired of investigations and findings and more investigations. Empty words and no action." Another comment from Emma Gisho, he says, "It's a no-brainer. The horror that exists in DRC is fueled by beneficiaries of conflict resources, be it minerals, logging, etc."
Well, we remain within the neighborhood and we revisit Kenya, but this time around we are not talking about politics, but rather something else, and that is famine. Now, the fact that parts of East Africa have been hit by famine and drought is not new anymore. But what is new is the relationship between those fleeing conflict and famine in Somalia and South Sudan and the communities in North and Northeast Kenya where they actually land. There is no war in Kenya, but in this part of the country, about 3 million people need food aid. It is hard, but the humanitarian agencies try to meet the needs of refugees, but not those of the locals. Something the locals say is unfair. From Kenya, Sandra Petersman sent us this report and is now presented by Rachel Stewart.
It's late afternoon and the eyes peering out from makeshift round huts are red and glazed. Due to the drought that has hit the area, the life of the normally nomadic Turkana tribe has come to a standstill. They have settled next to Kakuma refugee camp, which is run by the United Nations. The 180,000 refugees in the camp are predominantly from neighbouring South Sudan and Somalia, where war and drought have led to famine and poverty. Akiro Alimlim is one of the locals who are also seeking help.
I'm We should receive the same help as the refugees. We need food, water, and jobs. The refugees are settling here, on our land, and we should be compensated for that. We have never received help to settle anywhere. Nobody is building us a house. The refugees get help, and we get nothing. That's not right.
The tribe depends on its herd. If their livestock perishes, they lose their livelihood. In February, President Uhuru Kenyatta declared a national emergency because of the current drought, but there has been little action since then. Imate Namwa is in charge of water provision at county government level in Turkana. He is critical of how the central government is approaching the problem.
The national government at this moment is not coming together with the Turkana County government to plan on how to respond together. We are already distributing relief food to over 600,000 households. If the national government is again distributing food to the same households, there are households that will not be reached.
However, in the capital Nairobi, Andrew Tuimo from the Ministry of Agriculture passes the buck right back to the Turkana County government.
The national government has really had to support the county governments because they were really not prepared for this. They didn't have a lot of money for mitigation against drought. So the national government has done the bulk of the work.
Tuimo says that President Kenyatta is working tirelessly to mediate between tribes who are fighting over water and land. Kenyatta advocated on behalf of the Turkana people so that they can take their herds over the border to Uganda to search for new pasture. But, as Tuimo explains, the continuing drought is now threatening food production.
Going forward, the forecast is that the rains are still going to be very poor. In terms of crops, we have to really prepare. The crops may not be so good this year because already planting is late. It's very likely that we will have a food shortage, but the government is, of course, taking measures towards that.
Precisely what these measures entail is not clear. In recent weeks, the national government sent diesel generators to the Turkana region to power water pumps, but there is no diesel to run the generators. The county government says it cannot afford to pay for the fuel. Accusations and blame are being flung back and forth between the government and opposition ahead of elections in August, but little is being done for sustainable development of the drought-affected areas. As politicians devote their attention to the Turkana oil reserves, which were discovered in 2012, the local people are reduced to begging alongside a refugee camp.
A report by Sandra Petersman.
Yuzon.
Now, talk about some entertainment news, and the first thing that comes to your mind is Hollywood for the US and probably Bollywood for the Asian world. But let's boil it down to Africa, our continent, and you talk about Hollywood, Nigeria's own Movieland, is the world's second most prolific film industry, trailing India's Bollywood, but also ahead of Hollywood. Nollywood is reckoned to put more than 2,000 films each year. The themes are African, the style is African, and so are actors, and at least until recently. That's always been the rule. But now, a white British actor, Claire Edun, is making her debut in a Nollywood production. Jens Brochers found out how, and his piece is now presented by Charlotte Lomas.
I'll take you where you've never been. I'll make your heart go ting-a-ling-a-ling.
Not everything that leads to success necessarily has to start out from something beautiful or well-made. Claire Edun from England made her first on-screen appearances on YouTube. Her rendition of Oi Boy Queen, White Queen, may not strike you as the most brilliant of vocal performances, but it helped Claire Edun get on the road to becoming something of a film star in Africa's most populous nation. One of Nigeria's most famous directors, Lancelot Imazuan, discovered the English actress online. He offered her a role in his film, a classic Nollywood production. Why? Because Claire Edun doesn't just speak pidgin English, she's obsessed with it, says the director.
I was motivated to go into this work, this project, when I saw the skit of Oyibo Princess. I said, no, this cannot be true. I investigated and discovered that she's full-blooded British, born and raised in London, has never spent 1 month or 2 months in Nigeria, and yet she has taken so much interest in the Nigerian thing, speaks flawless pidgin English as you can never imagine. And I say, wow.
Edun didn't learn pidgin in Nigeria. She learned it through Nigeria.
I found that with Nollywood and pidgin English, I was actually surprising myself with how much
I could pick up from watching something. So, yeah, I think that's where the spark came, just realising that it wasn't that different to what I'm used to.
Still, pidgin sounds very different from British English.
Oh, man, no, correct, man, I beg. May you not look anywhere else.
Claire Eden was working as an air stewardess. She must have flown to Nigeria some 100 times, mainly to Lagos. She loved the country and its people. She learned pidgin and began to perform stand-up at Nigerian festivals in London. News quickly spread, a white woman armed with perfect pidgin and razor-sharp wit.
Now, one day I did take flight, go Niger. Now, my job inside the plane be that, so I didn't...
One day I had to fly to Nigeria for work, Claire begins a story. Three young Nigerian men were chatting in pidgin on the plane about, well, about Claire's behind, not knowing, of course, that the stewardess understood, and they had quite a bit to say about it.
I beg God forget that thing, why they talk that kind of thing on top of my matter. Chai!
Claire married her Nigerian husband in London, but she's trying to persuade him to move to Lagos. She's already had the red carpet treatment in Nigeria. She's giving interviews, this time in the Queen's English.
For me, I think that you need to understand the culture first of all, and then you need to then understand the people. And I've never experienced people that actually welcome me more than the Niger culture. So that's why if I receive the love, I will give the love back, you know.
The film, called Authentic Tentative Marriage, is getting a lot of attention because of the Oi Boy Princess's starring role. Perhaps this is just the start of a glittering career.
I am your Oi Boy Queen, the girl of your dream.
Some interesting adventure there, and that report was filed by Ian Boiches.
It is always so interesting to listen to such stories, you know. They show you the diversity of the entertainment industry and the inclusivity as well, not just in Africa, but in other continents, you know.
That's the global world we live in today.
Absolutely, and it's quite fascinating to listen to.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back and revisit our top story and hear what people have been talking about, Wanjiku.
Yes, and just to remind you, our top story is from Zimbabwe, where Morgan Tsvangirai has signed a memorandum of understanding with Joyce Mujuru. And what they intend to do is oust Robert Mugabe, the current president. And comments coming in from a Kenyan called Lorraine. She says, Morgan Tsvangirai has been the leader of the opposition in Zimbabwe for 18 years. He doesn't give up power. To me, he's just similar to Mugabe.
But, well, as we heard from that interview with the person that I was talking to there, he said this is only an alliance of convenience.
Yes, absolutely. And people seem to be distrustful of, you know, it's in Kenya, it's been referred to as a marriage of, you know, convenience, like you said. And Tauri Moyo says, I just don't know why Mujuru and Tsvangirai think they can be trusted again after 34 years in ZANU-PF government. Why must we trust them honestly?
Perhaps they're saying old wine in new bottles?
Well, looking over to our Facebook page, a comment coming in right now from Magayane Said. He says, good evening. Actually, this alliance cannot defeat Mr. President Mugabe because he is a strong and powerful man, except maybe they make good preparation by adding more energy in the revolution through various political techniques. Do keep commenting on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Yes, that's interesting. They should keep commenting. But perhaps we want to talk about the elections in Kenya as well.
Yes, we do have also comments from that. Remember, the president called a press conference today saying that he will not condone any political violence ahead of the elections. A comment from Kibet, commenting on the National Super Alliance, who also had an event today. He says, NASA's major announcement was that their major announcement today was about making a major announcement on the 27th.
Announcement, an announcement, an announcement. There's so many announcements. Well, Wanjiku, you're my neighbors, and I can only wish you the best. No violence, not during, not after, always peaceful. That's, I think, what we need to do.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you for listening to Africa Link. We hope you enjoy the show, and we'll be back tomorrow, same time. Have a nice day.